following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here are David Littlejohn and Katie Shook with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Okay. Just kidding. Welcome to the True Wealth Show.
Are you really choking on your own spit right now?
I thought that's what happened. It's all that smoke that's still here a week later. Oh, gosh. Gang, welcome to the True Wealth Show. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn. In studio with me today
is Katie Shook. By the way, I have given up, like, betting on when things are going to happen.
Oh, my God.
Because
gosh.
I have, like, failed so miserably. I'm like, thank God this isn't a game in Vegas. Because, like, I thought COVID would have blown over by summer. Did not expect it to still be hanging around. I assumed, like, these fires are going to suck for this week, but, like, it should blow through. It's even worse now, air quality, than it has been.
No, let's talk about it, right? I mean, this is the year that we have essentially, if you could be wrong.
This is it.
I nailed it in every category.
Like,
you know, and let's just kind of go through, like, oh, that pandemic can't last that long. Here, hold my beer, said COVID, right? And then it was things like, oh, the market's all just going to crash. It's all going to go away. Guess what? All-time highs.
Right.
And then, and now people, this is the new one. We could touch on this today, election. So, right, the markets are going to crash. It's like 2008 all over again. And here's, look, if 2020 has taught us anything, it's like, oh, don't you play that game, right?
I just feel like I should just sit down, right? Can I bench myself? Is that even a thing? Like,
yeah,
I
just need a breather.
Bench myself. Just take me out of the game, right? Don't put me in, coach. Take me out, please. Just take me out.
So possibly one of the smartest things that you can do in theory. By the way, I'm going to do so because we bill by the hour here. We also have another guest in studio.
Because we bill by the hour.
We're about to, right? Please welcome. This one is fun. I get to make probably the first public announcement here. One of our favorite attorneys from Simmons Law.
The very best.
Right now, yes, if you know the history. So thank you for joining us, Derek Simmons.
We're gonna
have some fun today. Watch this. Sorry, Dale, I got him. He's on now. Yep. So Mike,
you weren't on.
Hot.
Let's try this
again. Now you could say welcome, Derek, or you could say hi, I'm here.
But I did it so well last time.
I know. And you'll do it again, right? It'll be brilliant.
Because nobody heard it.
It is a delight to be here.
That's true. It's like, well, and this is why I tease, because we had to launch. And so Derek, you know, very stealthily snuck into studio. Notice you didn't hear him. And then we also figured out, oh, yeah, turn on the mic. Right, so my bad.
Yeah, that wasn't a mic drop. That was an oops.
So stoked to have you here, and stoked to be able to share with everybody that you've now hung out your own shingle. So
very exciting, yes.
Simmons Law, and I understand still willing to take on new clients, provided they're not horrible, awful people.
That is correct. Yeah,
okay.
The horrible, awful people
can go to your competitors.
Yes.
Okay. So, there's plenty of other attorneys. Talk to them. But if you're not horrible and awful, then Derek is delighted to speak to you. Here we go. We're going to check the levels, too.
Uh-oh.
I'm just going to roll with it.
See, it's 2020.
I can do that. We want the gain, too, or just straight volume?
Straight volume.
All right, nailed it.
I can just start yelling and see how that works.
We'll figure it out eventually, guys, and it'll sound great on the podcast.
I have no volume control, so I realize my tone goes up and down constantly.
This is why one should be here a couple of minutes before airtime.
Well, you know, fortunately, we've done this a time or two, so we'll wing it. Look, I want to talk with you guys, everybody out there listening. I got some fun ones today. Right?
I wish that was a beer.
So, first of all, I do want to address what I think is quickly becoming the elephant in the room. This will be a theme. We'll revisit this over the coming weeks, but yes, we have an election coming. Yes, the markets are kind of all over the board. And yeah, everybody's trying to game this thing. Well, what if Trump wins? What if Biden wins? What does it mean? So we can flirt with that a little bit today. But I'm going to tell you that it's really, really tough to handicap. And believe it or not, I would argue that that's a good thing.
Right? Why?
Agreed.
Well, because...
I mean, just why?
So, first of all, let me... This is the disclosure time, right? My attorney's here. So, the disclosure is, this is not individual investment advice I'm about to give, but I'm going to talk about the nature of how markets operate.
Okay.
And then we can all just sort of unpack this a little bit. To have a market, you need both buyers and sellers.
Yeah. So what happens if you have only buyers or only sellers?
Well, then you get a trend one direction.
There you go.
Right? If everybody wants to buy and nobody wants to sell, prices go
up because the seller now gets to top priority pricing.
Scarcity.
Well, that's exactly. It's supply and demand. If there's not much of it and everybody wants it, it's like, whoever's willing to be the high bidder gets
it. So HVAC filters is what you're
thinking. HVAC filters are pretty valuable all of a sudden.
Are they not teaching this in econ anymore? Like, I feel like this sounds like new concepts, even though these are very old concepts.
So,
but I feel like younger generations don't understand that.
I think it's possible that they're teaching it and it's not being learned.
Yeah.
That's a possibility.
But is it even being taught?
Here's what I see happening a lot of the time, okay? Let me use a phrase that we hear a lot. Well, those people are the smartest ones in the room.
What?
You've never heard that phrase?
Yeah, but I mean...
This is often, you know, like we send our best and our brightest to military academies. That's probably true, actually. But, like, do you really think that all of the politicians that we have in Washington, D.C. are the smartest people in the country?
No.
To a good extent, they're the best looking people in their areas.
Well, maybe to the voter. You know, if you think about it, there are a lot of people. I know a lot of really smart people. They have zero desire to be in politics because they're smart enough to not go in. So,
yeah,
so
they just don't want their personal lives in the public.
Here's the point that I'm really angling toward. It's not about the quality of our politicians or who's smart or who's not per se. It's that we oftentimes try to make things more complicated than they need to be.
Oh, yeah.
Right? We look for really sophisticated explanations. And there's a term for what it says is the simplest solution is the highest probability of being correct. Okay? It's a term called
Occam's razor.
That's correct. Good job.
I like Occam's razor.
Occam's razor. And it says, you know, you should just try to discard or slice away all the superfluous detail, all the extra junk, and what you're left with is the most likely answer. Which is why conspiracy theories are really hard. It's not to say they don't exist, but it's, in my opinion, it's oftentimes more likely that human incompetence is the result or is the cause rather than a really sophisticated, broadly distributed conspiracy.
Like, so that's probably true. So apply it to the market for us.
Okay. So applying it to the market, it simply works this way. If you have a lot of uncertainty, then you have a lot of work with price discovery. Price discovery is what an auction is all about. It's about figuring out where the supply and demand points meet. And so people don't have any, we don't know the result of the elections yet, right? People are trying to handicap or guess what will happen, but we don't know. And, you know, the elections are now not just about the presidential election. It's also about the disposition of the House and Senate.
Right.
Right. And the political regimes that control those two bodies and whether or not it will be a cooperative environment or
hostile.
That's probably the right term for it.
Hostile.
Or the United States of America.
Yes. It could be cooperative or it could be what we have now.
Oh, my goodness.
The markets really dislike uncertainty.
Yeah.
Okay. And so uncertainty tends to lead toward volatility, and volatility is a funny code word for either risk or broader ranges of price discovery, right? It just means we can't figure it out. So the price of range fluctuates in a wider array because, you know, Katie, your opinion, Derek, my opinion, we can't agree.
Well, and
yes, we can. Oh, just trying that out.
So. Says the attorney. No, but that actually was a good point, David. I mean, the three of us in the room, right? And there are things that we share similarly, whether it's faith and sometimes politics, but we all three, like, A, I'm female and you guys are male, right? So we look at things a little differently.
Just gender assign me?
I totally gender assigned
you. Just saying.
Last time I checked, you claimed yourself as male.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that.
I actually wondered, sorry, side note, I was filling out paperwork today and it said male or female. And I'm like, I'm wondering how long this is actually going to remain on forms until there's a point when they say you can't ask that question any longer.
All right, punt.
Anyways, yeah, right? But we're different ages. We have different amounts of children. We're in different just avenues of our life at this point, right? Sure. Like, so, I mean, we all in our histories, in our past, all affects how we view the world.
Our interests.
Our interests.
The life phase.
Right.
Although value systems are
Derek does
relatively
like
similar.
Dr. Pepper. So, you know, I'm already a fan of his anyway.
I'm a huge fan of Diet Dr. Pepper.
It is.
Yeah, as am I. It tastes more like the original.
And for the record, when Katie was alluding to beer earlier, it's definitely Diet Dr. Pepper.
It's Diet Dr. Pepper. It made that like Budweiser commercial
sound. Next
time I'll
do the microphone.
You should all right, guys, hold my Diet Dr.
Pepper.
Pepper.
Yeah. We are not
placement.
Drinking in
we're
studio.
We're not sponsored by Diet Dr. Pepper.
I know.
So
I just,
but we're open to hearing from them. Yeah. So, you know, because everybody in this room is a fan. So Diet Dr. Pepper, if you would like to talk about sponsorship of the True Wealth Show, we're here.
Yeah, we're here for you.
Okay, so we're talking about the election. Let me just bring it home for a minute because we're kind of running up on
our
a natural
break.
So here's the thing. We want price discovery, right? And why is that healthy? Because going into an election, the uncertainty means lots more participants trying to figure it out. First of all, lots of participants is good, right? When you have really low volume, like very few people with price discovery, you know what you get?
You get anybody that does something causes a bigger move.
You get a skewed market.
Yes, it's more powerful trends by fewer people.
Right.
Because essentially, your sample size is shrinking. Okay, it's like getting 10% of the people are the only ones that vote. Well, they still make the decision, but 90% of people didn't get heard from. So in this case, you want lots of votes.
Isn't that kind of the difference between like the mean and the median?
I don't think so much in this case. I'm just talking more grandiosely about the concept that for folks that are worried about a market collapse, that means that you have to get everybody to sort of agree and run the same direction. And we're not doing that yet. Okay? So I think there's another key element, though, to the election that we need to talk about.
You're not going
to
tell us, are you?
No, we're totally going to take a break, and then we're going to come back. And on the flip side of it, I will share, besides the price discovery, what do we need to know about for the election? That and more, but we got to take a break. This is David Littlejohn.
And Katie Shuck.
And Derek Simmons.
And you're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang. Welcome back to The True Wealth Show. I am your host, Dave Littlejohn. In studio today
is Katie Shuck and
Derek Simmons.
Oh, see, I pointed, but we're all...
See, I'm not even looking at you. I'm multitasking.
Well, I was letting you finish your multitasking, but that's okay. We got this.
I got the mom ear, you know? Hey. It's like where I can focus and like still listen to my kids at the same time.
I'm unfamiliar with it. I'm a dude. So, look, I'm going to remind you guys, if you're just joining us, you missed out because we were talking a little bit about what is going on with the markets heading into the election. And so I'm going to encourage you to check out our podcast. It's going to be available at littlejohnfs.com. It'll be posted tomorrow and you can catch up on this stuff. But we're covering, we talked a little bit about price discovery, but there's one other big item that I think people need to think about come election time. This is a professional element. Okay. This is not something the typical consumer is going to think about or necessarily participate in. Maybe a handful, but most of you probably not. That is hedging. Okay.
That sounds complicated.
I bet against myself partly.
In
to
a
reduce
sense,
my risk.
Yes. Hedging is all about using what's called the derivatives market. Okay. Another fancy, remember, a derivative or a derivation of. So you have a thing. And then you create a thing related to the thing. And that thing that's related is a derivative.
Complicated.
Stick with me here. There's another fancy word for this. They're called options.
Ah.
Okay.
Sounds
and
more familiar.
So options or futures. These are two different versions of the same things. Futures are most commonly relatable to commodities like crops.
Soybeans.
Yeah. Farmer's going to plant some corn. and they're going to pre-sell the harvest. So they're selling a future harvest at a price today. If the harvest is bountiful, then they may get underpaid for how much they produced.
If the entire state burns.
Yeah, if there's nothing,
oh my gosh,
then they get a tiny harvest and they get a bunch of money for a tiny harvest. So the farther out you go, the more risk there is in purchasing a future value. You can purchase future values for the stock market in various categories, whether it's the S&P 500 as an index or the Dow index or lots of others. But you can also purchase options. That's not a future value per se. That's the right to buy or sell something at a guaranteed price for a guaranteed amount of time.
So why would, now there's a price to buy an option.
Yep.
And then why would you buy an option?
Well, let's
give
use
me an
one
example.
Of my favorite examples. Let's talk about Tesla, because if you go to my Twitter feed, you'll see that I was really snarky about Tesla a couple weeks ago. And I fessed up and said, well, here's a stock that I totally missed, right? We have some clients and they bought Tesla a long time ago and they made a boatload of money in it. And they're like, neener, neener, we're smart and you're not. And I'm on the inside, I'm like, well, if that's what you say, I think you're lucky. I think you're lucky.
Yeah,
it
always feels good when you're lucky and you're right. But when
Tesla
you're not lucky and you're wrong.
Crazy speculative. So anyway, Tesla it's now split in value. It was up to about a $2,500 value and they split it 5-for-1. So Tesla stock got to just over $500. And I went on Twitter and said, boy, did I miss this one. But the futures market, but rather the options market says I didn't. The next day, Tesla fell by 20%. Options markets were pricing a $50 premium and saying, if you want to sell for $500, it's going to cost you $50 to buy the right to sell. And the next day, it fell to $450.
Woo!
Which means you could have done that, spent $50, and then the next day when the price tanked, your $50 basically was what you paid is what if you sold the stock. Remember, you're selling the stock first and then buying back, or you know, when you exercise an option, though, I figure that I can sell it for $500, right? Because that's what I bought, was the right to sell it for $500. It fell to $450.
So
I sell it for $500 and I buy it back for $450. I make the $50. How much was my option again?
$50. So you're
$50.
Even.
So I made nothing.
So
it was a push.
You're just for the record, you're not saying that you confessed to this on Twitter and the next day the price collapsed. It's not your fault, right?
I'm neither confirming nor denying this. I'm simply saying that I snarkily
the market is what the market is.
I snarkily said the options market is pricing a collapse in Tesla and then it fell 20% the next day. So
because David likes to make data driven decisions,
because I'm a nerd. All right. So here's the thing. Let's talk real world application.
OK,
you like none of us. Derek, do you know what's going to happen at the election? Do you know who's going to win?
Yeah.
OK, what will you tell us?
But before I tell you that,
you'll wait for it to happen.
I'm going to back you up. You remember we actually had I was on your show on the day of the election in 2016.
OK.
And so it was the day, and we hadn't gotten to the night, and when, of course, President Trump won.
Right, and I think both of us looked at each other and thought, this can't happen.
And
it's,
I remember
you Hillary's
saying,
a shoo-in.
Let's talk about what happens to the market if President Trump wins.
Uh-huh.
And then we laughed because everybody knew that wasn't going to happen.
Right.
And the markets knew that wasn't going to happen. And yet it did. And then the things that everybody thought was going to happen in the market
didn't happen. Exactly.
Oh, yeah. They said if he wins,
oh,
it's going to
happen at all.
Drop and
it
was actually skyrocketed.
We wanted this consistency of keeping the same regime in office and carrying forth. And then what happened is overnight, the futures collapsed for like 2 hours and then they skyrocketed higher. And the markets went on to have like a 1/4 run of almost 15-20%. Crazy recovery. So you're absolutely correct, Derek.
Yep.
Absolutely.
You don't know.
So when we say, can you handicap this election?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. So what are you going to do?
My favorite judge is definitely going to be reelected.
Okay. Yeah. Running unopposed also.
That's really as far
can
as I'm
can you
go
handicap the presidential election?
I'm not going to.
Okay. Yeah, so, and that's my answer to it. It's like, I can. I just, it's total
but
wild
it's guessing,
guess, right?
Yeah.
It's total swag. So
And at that point, isn't it really confirmation bias? Like you're just kind of going, well, I kind of like this person over the other, and so I'm just going to guess this guy.
Most of the analysts that are right, it's a confirmation bias or what we call survivorship bias. You know, you get 10 people, everybody guesses something different. The one that got it right is the one that you go talk to later. You go, well, how did you get this right? And they say, well, this is why I'm so smart. Okay, do they get it right next time? Hardly ever, right? Hardly ever, because it was just a guess, right? Right. And they just happened to guess correctly. They pulled the lotto ticket, and next time they may not get the lotto ticket.
Yeah, there's a donkey in Saskatchewan that picks the presidential election without fail.
Right.
What?
Every time. Steps on the right bucket. Happens every time. No, I'm making that up, Katie.
I was like, there is no
way. You're actually looking at my face. You can tell I'm lying, but the people on the radio can't. No.
They're like, a donkey in Saskatchewan? And I'm like,
they don't have those.
And I'm sitting there going, it's a mule.
Well, I was thinking, you know, when you talk about guessing, I was thinking of when we were at a fundraiser event and they played the game Heads or Tails. Do you remember this? And they bring up
like heads, like,
oh my gosh. So what they do is they bring up a handful of participants. I don't know if you had to pay to play or what the deal was.
This was at the Fish Derby.
Yeah, yes, it was at the Fish Derby a few years ago. Did you have to pay to play? Do you remember?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, play
so what they do is they get a coin, right? And before they flip the coin, you either put your hands on your head or put your hands on your bum, and that's your tails. And then they flip a coin, and whoever guessed it right gets to stay. And wasn't it like either heads or tails like 17 times in a row? It was something.
It was uncanny.
To the point where we were going, is this a rigged coin? Like, is it meant to? Yeah.
Exactly. Like, right? No, like, swap the coin
swap
out.
Swap the
it's
coin
like
out.
The casino would be saying, like, all right, there's something wrong with those dice.
Right? Like, oh, they would have called that five shots in. They, like, it wouldn't have gone as far as it did. But because it was a fundraiser, it was just interesting to see. But I've never seen a coin flip.
Right.
Go that way, ever.
So statistically improbable, but not impossible.
Right.
Now, when we talk about how do we handicap the stock market, here's my bigger point. My bigger point is that because it's really difficult to handicap, then many of the large institutional players that are not long-term players, the long-term investors are just going to kind of
roll
deal
their,
with
yeah,
it. They're
shrug
not
their shoulders get, and
they're
deal
gonna
with
just,
it.
Just ride through this the same way like 2008. You know, you may make some tactical moves, but for the most part, you grit your teeth and bear it. But a lot of institutions and hedge funds are going to buy a bunch of options, and they're going to structure things to sort of play either direction. And then once the election is clear, and I say that because I'm not convinced that there will be a concession the very next day unless it is a really big landslide one way or the other. Because I think we're sort of being set up in the media that there's a lot of mail-in ballots and there could be uncertainty and it could take a while. So I expect that institutionally you'll see a lot of hedging. And once there's a directional confirmation for parties in power, then you'll start to see the markets unwind those hedges and then commit to a market thesis. But until there's clarity, it's very difficult to commit to a market thesis. But again, that aids into what we talked about in the first segment, which is price discovery. And so I don't see this as like I saw in hindsight, 2008. People are saying this feels like 2008. And I'm going, how?
Yeah, why do you think that? Yeah, the question is
it,
why?
Because 2008 was a leverage and collateral crisis in the banking system where banks were radically over-leveraged. And then we had a mark-to-market change in accounting that forced illiquid assets to be valued in present-day value. And there was no buyer for an illiquid asset, which meant fire sale. Price drop, and all of a sudden banks were under collateralized, had to have capital calls, couldn't do it, and they failed insolvency and they went bankrupt. And that's how we lost Bear Stearns and that's how we lost the Lehman Brothers.
Okay, so I'm going to agree with you that that is what happened. But I am going to say, how are they the same? I would say there was a huge amount of economic uncertainty at that point. There's a huge amount of economic uncertainty right now.
Yes, but the financial system itself underpinning the economic certainty is very different now
than it
12 years
then.
Ago than it was
Your
back
question
in 2008.
Was, how are they the same?
True.
I stand by my answer.
Oh,
okay.
Well,
see, because as we've established
the attorney
before,
was listening.
Must be right. You know, how are they the same? Okay. Then let me, the next question, Your Honor, is that material to the markets?
Yes, it is.
Because
okay, how?
Oh, see, now you just keep going on this.
Yeah,
right,
because.
Right.
All right, so I want the because.
Because there are institutional investors and investment professionals who make decisions based on the economic uncertainty. Well, no, the economic underpinnings. But then there are the rest of the great unwashed masses who don't.
Right.
And they go with their gut.
And he's actually correct that sentiment does matter, because lemmings aren't necessarily thinking. They're just following a herd. Okay. So I still maintain that
I think
most people are cautious, but hopefully they are not panicky. Markets are quite high. This is not advice when I suggest this, right? But if you were in an environment where you it was not a negative tax ramification for making a transaction, right? That's a code for saying, hey, if I sell my stuff, I got to pay taxes on it. Okay, well, that's definitely a decision influencer. But if you had retirement accounts or something and you said, I just can't stomach the risk right now, then you can sideline yourself. Right, you could sell everything at relatively high market values right now and just wait it out. Now, maybe you're right and the markets go down a whole bunch and you get to take all that dry powder and buy stuff on sale later. Maybe you're not, and you end up looking at the market running away from you, and then you have another problem, which is, when do I get back in?
I can remember people saying this in like 2011. Boy, I took all my money out right away, and now I really wish I hadn't.
Yes. And so...
Don't jump off the roller coaster at the top.
I'm not going to dig into this too much other than say the other option is to take some off the table. Okay. And there are some really strategic and mathematical rationales for how and why you would do that. It's something in the professional arena that we talk about called position sizing. It's a component of tactical management. Just how big a bite of the apple do you want to take? How much risk do you want to own? Okay, these are more complicated issues than I want to explore on the radio. What I will tell you is see me after class, right? They can call our office if you are wondering about your personal investment circumstance. We can either talk to you about some of the hedging tools we have, some of the scenario tools that we can run through to give you. We really can't predict risk in the sense that, like, we know the answer. What we can do is say, well, using the variables that we're aware of and using historical correlations, this is the type of risk that's likely embedded in the situation. These are institutional tools, right? This is sophisticated stuff that ends up with a lot of software and AI logic and so forth to say, okay, well, let's project a little bit about where things may go. And if you're right about it and it looks like this, how does this affect my investments? What if you're wrong and it looks like that? Here's how the other effect would be. And so we do some of that modeling to help set expectations and to also help you figure out, do you have more risk in your strategy than you're comfortable taking? Or the flip side is, what if you're not taking enough? What if your long-term financial plan requires
more risk,
that you take some risk, and you're just too chicken to do it? Well, then you're less likely to cross the finish line when you want to. So you could endanger your financial success by under-risking as well. And isn't it kind of nice to figure out, you know, where's your benchmark, right? Otherwise, I always say it's like a Sunday drive, right? You'll get there because you have nowhere to go. Just hop in and go. Doesn't matter what the destination is. Okay, well, you can invest like that, and maybe you'll get lucky. But I like a little more intention in my investment strategy.
I like a little more money in my investment strategy.
Well, there's no guarantees of outcomes. That's not what we're talking about here. But I can tell you that guarantees of intention can really help. All right. So look, we're going to take another break because we're going to totally shift gears. The election's going to happen with or without us. But you know what I want to know?
What?
And I'm going to ask both of you when we come back. What is the biggest financial mistake or the worst financial advice you've ever received?
I like
that one. I think will be fun. So stick around. We'll be right back. This is David Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
And Derek Simmons.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show, where I'm glad that there are air filters in studio.
Yay.
It's not nearly as hot in here as it was last week.
No, it was hot last week.
Oh, my gosh.
It was hot outside last week. It's cooled down a bunch.
Although so, I will say, is it 2 weeks ago that we were in here, or was it last week?
Last week.
It was last week that we were in here, and it was pitch black. Because,
it was like nighttime.
Because it was so crazy. Like, we left at 5 o'clock, and it was like it was dark. Like, the streetlights were on. It felt like December.
Yeah.
It was eerie. It was the darkest it's ever been that we've been in the studio.
And I think it was probably yesterday, driving near your home, that I saw about the worst visibility the whole time.
It was.
It was
really
down
bad.
To maybe 50 yards. It was terrible. So the struggle was real. What, close to 600 for that the particle measure or whatever of bad air? 300 is like the max on the meter.
All right, so here's our PSA. Drive safe, people. Like, give some extra grace. Give yourself some extra time.
No,
be safe on the
so
roads.
Bad. I mean,
David, it's pretty bad.
No, there's at least a half mile visibility.
Our air quality is still up around 4 something.
So don't breathe it, but you
can
still
see. I don't think it's that high. Not. We don't have to worry about it for now. It's still, you know, I would like it cleaner, but I don't think it was as bad as, I mean, it's been improving, and I'm grateful for that.
239 according to my weather index.
Yep, see. Anyhow.
Still says very unhealthy air.
Yes. Nobody's going to be wrong on this show today.
Just today.
Just today. Nope. As soon as the show's over, it's on.
I like Donkey Kong.
So I want to ask, we're going to shift gears. I really want to get a set. And there's a, I'm angling towards something, right? And it is back in the beginning of COVID, we started this series that we called The Stuff About Money They Don't Teach in School. And it was really geared toward kids. This was a result of many of the clients of our firm wanting us to try to help teach their kids a little bit more. And so we created a YouTube channel and we started adding videos. And we did it for the month of April. And we're revisiting the concept of starting to do this on a weekly basis. So if you're interested, you can go to YouTube and look up Little John Financial and you'll find us there. Or you can go through our webpage and find it as well. But we've got this available for kids, and it turns out the parents could benefit from it too. We just kind of stripped the language down to where like the junior high school kid would understand it and use simple illustrations, and everybody sort of went, you know, that's not the worst. It was very organic. It wasn't really highly produced. It's just me speaking, right, about different topics.
Which is what you do best.
So we're going to get back to our roots and do some of that. But as we do, I have been asking people, and so I've got, you know, two smart folks in studio with me here, either what has been the worst financial advice you've ever been given, or what is what you would consider a financial mistake that was significant that you really had to learn a hard lesson from that you could share. And I have one. I'm happy to go first, but if either of you guys have something where you're thinking, you know, had I known better, it would have been this.
So I want to share one that I'm glad that I have family that is a little bit of a gut check. I was in my early 20s and I went to a real estate investing seminar. Okay, so here's a guy up trying to sell his process. And it was basically leverage the heck out of yourself to buy more properties so that you have all this rental income. But it was all over leveraged to the point where people were borrowing on their credit cards and borrowing against things to go buy property. And I left this, you know, when you leave and something just doesn't sit right with you. And I was like, this just sounds like a house of cards. Like, you
like
get
bad sushi or something.
Yeah. Like you get, I don't know what that is. Cause I don't eat in those places. When you leave and you hear this, right. And he's having people that he sold this program to stand up and they're like, oh yeah, I've bought like 20 houses in the last month. And you know, I did it on credit card debt. And he's talking about how leveraged they are. And I'm thinking, if you have 3 or 4 tenants that don't pay, all of a sudden you have all these mortgages that you don't make enough income to pay, and then they're going to be foreclosed properties.
So was this like 2007 when you were?
It probably was, honestly. It probably was. It was actually probably about 2005, 2004, 2005, like beginning of the boom.
That would have been the hot time.
Right? Oh, but I was just like, it wasn't a fad. I mean, I'm thinking this guy's going around touring, throwing these seminars. I mean, I paid to go to listen to him, and I just left thinking, how many people's lives, like, did you tell them to go just leverage every, like, get any penny you could anywhere you can to go buy all these different properties? And I mean, that's scary. Like, when we think about our financial advice that we give at Little John, it's like, we want to make sure that it's not trendy advice. Like, it's sound?
Well,
it's couch.
Yours is really similar to mine, which was I was advised buy as much house as you can afford. And I now advise that your housing should really be under 30% of your income.
Right.
Roughly. And if it costs more than that, then you are endangering other parts of your strategy. And people say, well, gosh, housing costs so much. No, I get it. But that doesn't give, just because housing is more expensive than your income can support, doesn't mean that you should make financially reckless decisions. It just means that the housing market is problematic and we don't have a good way to fix it.
Right. Well, that just means there's things that need to be adjusted. Either you need to stop looking at so much house, look in a different area, or think about how to raise your income.
You know, yeah. I mean, if you make $1,000 a month and, you know, you've got $300 toward housing, you're right. You better get a bunch of roommates. That's what that comes down to, because it's not going to pencil in almost any scenario.
Right.
That bugs people to be told that, but that's reality. We bought as much house as we could afford. We got in late December of 2000. It was December 17th of 2005. And I ended up living in that house for 12 years, selling the house. And by the time we paid the realtors, we made like a couple $1,000 on it.
Yeah, you basically sold it for what you paid for, and you paid the mortgage the whole time.
We paid mortgage the whole time. We put other money into the property that we never got back out. So that was actually a negative amortization if we map it out. And folks will say, well, you know, you got to live in the house. I said, that is true. But had I rented, it would have been at a fraction of the price of the cost of carrying that home. And so I could have used those resources elsewhere. So we were house poor for a decade.
Yeah. House poor is, again, going back to the real estate investment stuff.
And at least eventually rates came down and we finally built up enough equity that we could refi and start to get some traction. But, you know, that was a 6.5% mortgage back then, which we thought was pretty good. And then, you know, they dropped down to below. You know, we refied to 4.185, and then we were stuck there because it was a special government refi program, and we just wouldn't go lower. Right. And then when the rates got down to 3, we couldn't refi because we never had any equity in the house. And because the house value was such that we'd have to pony up so much money, we're like, well, God, we're trapped. So, yeah, that ended up being really dumb advice. And it makes me super sensitive. I protect other people from my dumb move. Like, don't buy too much house because it's not really an investment. And the people that used to advise that were used to a period from the 70s to the 2000s. So we had a 35-year period where real estate never had significant pullbacks in value.
Right.
It just kept going up unless you left the property derelict or it was condemned or something.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm pretty sensitive to that. Real estate is not a guaranteed winner. Right. And people that used to say that, I just roll my eyes and go, here we go again. There is no sacred asset class in a market where there's massive federal monetary intervention and we have things like COVID that can change the dynamic of supply and demand.
Yeah. So my story is actually real estate as well. And I have been, something you guys know about me, I am a saver.
Yep.
Yes, you are.
I am worried about security. For my entire life, I've been worried about security. I want to not worry about where my next meal's coming from. So I save. I save, I save, I save. And I like the idea of real estate because they're not making any more.
Mm-hmm.
And prices do tend to go up, although I did live through 2008 as well. I bought an apartment complex in Kansas. And
when did you do that?
Oh, it was in 2008, maybe.
Okay.
It was after the giant.
Sorry,
this is, I know you know this because you know him personally. I don't know it. That's why I'm going to ask all sorts of weird questions about this now.
And, you know, one of the things that was really attractive was they're small apartments. And if people are evicted from their houses, they might need to find a cheap apartment. This seemed like a good place to go. And so I bought this. And the fun part of the story is, how much did a sixplex cost me in Kansas? You want to guess? Dave knows the answer to that.
I would say under 200,000.
That is a reasonable guess because Kansas is a godforsaken wasteland.
For all of you listening in Kansas.
It was a great place to grow up. And, you know, there are many things.
Great place to be from.
Well, no, just because I know my friend in Georgia bought her home for like $65,000. And I was like, you're kidding me, right?
So that's right. This sixplex was
I think the Romax wiring cost more than that in a home in Oregon.
I know.
This sixplex was $100,000.
Oh,
my
gosh.
You can't get a two-bedroom, one-bath in Oregon.
For $100,000.
And it's because the Oregon property is way better than Kansas. But it seemed like a good idea at the time. Now, here's the lesson that I learned since then. It is impossible to manage property four states away effectively.
Oh, okay.
It is just too far away unless you've got somebody in town there.
Yeah, unless you've got boots on the ground or a special relationship with a property management firm.
Yeah.
It's just hard.
So that one, it has not returned on investment.
Gotcha.
So do you have boots on the ground or a special relationship?
I don't in that town. I own some other rentals in towns where my brother lives and manages them, and that works a lot better.
Yeah. So there you go. Just make sure you have a sibling that you get along with that's near there.
Family members in general.
Okay. So look, let's do this. I want to take the last break. When we come back, you know, what did you learn from it? And what, you know, how are we going to help? Especially as we're talking to young folks, how we help them get the right start. So that and more when we come back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
Katie Shook.
And Derek Simmons.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 1240. Take you in.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show. Remember, podcast, if you're trying to figure this out, we've talked about, you know, election investment strategies, and now we're talking about really bad financial advice or bad financial experiences that we've had. And the theme has been that it was real estate mistakes.
Right, because real estate is still really an attractive investment.
Yes.
But it takes a lot of research.
It does. I mean, I'm a fan of real estate.
I am too.
It's been rough on me, but it's also been great to me. So it's a double-edged sword. But you know what? There's no such thing as a riskless transaction. Right. So I still maintain that's it's part of a healthy, comprehensive strategy because of the concept of passive income that it can generate. Right. And because it's oftentimes a way to convert a certain amount of income into capital gain.
Right.
Right? So that's a whole interesting concept. We could probably do a whole show about that, although most of you listening would find yourself going, oh my God, look at the time.
I don't know. I think one time we should talk. Maybe next week we'll talk about capital gains and what that means. But so you're talking about.
It's not just what you make. It's what you keep.
It's what you keep. We're talking about financial mistakes, but there's another one. When I was also in my 20s earning a good income, again, right, you know, 2000s, I had a financial advisor, but I wish he would have sat me down and said, this is what retirement would look like if you aggressively saved, because I had the money to do it. But nobody ever explained it to me in a way that made sense. Like, I just knew investments are smart things to do, right? And you should have an investment account. And I didn't understand much about the industry at that point. And I even kind of joked around with him. I said, you know, if you would remind me to put money in, I would do it. So I remember him taking a snapshot of my account every month and writing, please send money. And every time he did it, I would put money in the account. But he's like, you're not contributing. And I was like, well, I don't think about it when I pay my bills, right? Pay yourself first. Is something that David preaches a lot too. Like, pay yourself first. Let's get save for your future.
Pay yourself first. Spend less than you make, and
which again, like, wasn't. I wish somebody would have said, if you would have saved, you know, even $100
have
a month.
Have an emergency fund.
Yeah, like simple things that
I've heard from Dave a few times.
Right, David, where were you when I was in my 20s?
I was here probably.
Yeah.
So, you
I
know,
wasn't ready for you yet.
It's. This is why I am really focused on trying to reach younger folks with this simple message, because I think this is not political commentary per se, but I think we can all acknowledge there's a lot of unrest out there and there's a lot of polarization in opinions right now. You know, it's like your team, my team kind of stuff. And I think one of the bigger issues is a big lie that's been perpetrated on the public. Whether it was intentional or not, I can't tell. But the idea is that the pie is only so big, and that we need to somehow do aggressive redistribution of everything in order to make things fair. And I don't like these relative subjective terms. Fair is a dangerous term because there's no numbers attached to fair. You know, if somebody else has more than you and that's not fair, well, we got an issue, right? Because we can't really measure that. But I think socioeconomics is a huge divide in this country. I think more so than race and lots of other issues. And a lot of it starts with people just don't understand how the system works very well.
Agreed.
And so that's now some of it. People don't like it because, you know, you say things like, well, don't spend money you don't have. And people go, well, I deserve it. It's like, no, you don't. Okay, if you can't afford it, you can't buy it. But people will take a credit card and do it, then play victim like, well, you know, I can't believe the credit card company is so mean.
Lending.
Yeah, it's like, well, you didn't have to take it, right? Nobody made you spend the money you didn't have. So
how would credit look if we had to take an IQ test prior to getting credit?
I can't even go there. What I can tell you is that socioeconomic status is something that is mobile in the United States. Contrary to popular belief, I have witnessed firsthand people that have been in dire, desperate financial straits, and their lives have been completely turned around, and they are on the other end of the spectrum, and it's really compelling. It is doable. There is mobility in this country, but it starts with understanding the system.
True.
And it's not that Bill Gates or Mark Zuckerberg or Jeff Bezos has way more money than you. We could have a long, endless debate about that. But the idea is that just because they have lots of money doesn't mean that you can't be financially successful and solvent and have your own piece of the American dream. It is possible, but it will never be possible if you make foolish, self-harming financial decisions. Okay?
That was the PSA right there.
It is never possible if you have self-inflicted wounds, period.
True.
Okay? Don't pay interest if you can avoid it.
Right. I mean, the same way that, you know, all medical conditions aside, the spoon didn't do it. Okay. Your hand lifting the spoon did. There's got to be some ownership and accountability on this stuff. So we're going to teach our kids, right? And I hope that you all listening will check out our YouTube channel and start encouraging, if you got kids or grandkids, or even if it's just you and you're trying to figure more of this out, start checking them out, because we're going to be teaching how this stuff works. We're not selling you anything. We're just going to show you how it works.
By the way, shout out to Heather for reorganizing it to make it easier to find stuff on our YouTube channel.
Yeah. All right, look, we're out of time, so we're going to do the usual. Katie, if they need help financially, how do they reach us?
541-375-0898, littlejohnfs.com.
And Derek, if they need legal assistance, how do they reach you?
At Simmons Law, and they should look at www.seriousbusiness.law.
Good stuff, gang. Until next time, this has been True Wealth.
The preceding program was paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.